Okay, well, welcome everyone. My name is Erin Cameron, and I will be the acting facilitator for today's webinar, Past, Present, and Future of Energy Efficiency in the Southeast. On behalf of SACE, I'd like to thank you for attending today. Your interest and support make our work possible. Today's webinar is a great opportunity to share, learn, participate, ask questions, and get involved, so I hope you will take advantage of that. We're excited to share the latest information on clean energy policy, technology, and science with you through our monthly webinar series. I want to take a moment and orient you with the control panel on your screen. We will be recording this webinar, so all the lines have been muted to assure recording quality. You'll be able to chat in your questions under the questions option on your control panel. Your questions will then be fielded in the order they are received, and we will answer them at the end of our webinar. All material from this presentation will also be available on our website, cleanenergy.org. For those of you not familiar with SACE, we are a regional organization focused on promoting responsible energy choices that create global warming solutions to ensure clean, safe, and healthy communities throughout the Southeast. We are a membership organization, and we'd like to acknowledge all of our members on this call and encourage those of you who are not members to please join us today. I'd like to introduce our presenter today, Natalie Mims, SACE Energy Policy Manager. Natalie joined SACE in October 2010 to work on energy policy in the Southeast. She leads SACE efforts to support the rapid and sustainable ramp-up of energy efficiency programs throughout the Southeast. Prior to joining SACE, Natalie was a senior consultant in the electricity practice at Rocky Mountain Institute, working in Boulder, Colorado, and Kona, Hawaii. She led RMI initiatives on overcoming barriers to energy efficiency. While at RMI, Natalie contributed to consulting projects on demand-side management, greenhouse gas management strategies for electric utilities, and regulatory analysis of electricity utility systems. Her research focused on identifying and quantifying the energy efficiency potential of the United States and identifying the best opportunities to capture the energy, environmental, and economic savings. Natalie holds a BA in English and Political Science from the Pennsylvania State University and a Master's of Studies in Environmental Law from Vermont Law School. And now I'd like to turn the presentation over to Natalie.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Erin, for the introduction, and thanks, everyone, for joining the call. If we can go to the next slide. As you heard Erin say, we're going to talk about the past, present, and future of energy efficiency in the Southeast. And fortunately, we're not going to have a history lesson. The past is pretty brief. We're really just talking about up until 2009. I've lumped kind of into the past where there was very little utility energy efficiency activity. And then the present is basically from 2009 to today, where there's been a really significant increase in efficiency spending. Spending on energy efficiency programs by the utilities, as well as significant increases in the energy efficiency impacts. So that's a good story. And then we're going to talk about the future and how the Southeast can continue to grow and some opportunities that we see at SACE to move forward with advancing clean energy in the Southeast. So if we can go to the next slide. So taking a step back into the past, fortunately, our past does not have to predict our future. If we can go to the next slide. So energy efficiency impacts prior to 2009 were pretty insignificant, and I'm sure as many of the people on the call know, there was very few Southeastern states that had supportive energy efficiency policy or incentives for utilities to encourage consumers to adopt energy efficiency. And the states that did have policy were really not interpreting it in a very positive way. So we didn't have a whole lot to work with. And TVA, the board for TVA had not required them to do an IRP yet. So that was something that was we were hoping was going to happen. And Florida is a state that had an IRP policy, but it wasn't very robust and still isn't. And as an example of where we were, you know, in 2007, our five states that SACE works in collectively spent less than $100 million in energy efficiency, which is a really insignificant budget. So if we can go to the next slide. Fortunately, the policy tide really began to shift around 2008. And you can see on the left side of my timeline, Florida Energy Efficiency Conservation Act was around. It was a policy that was passed in 1980, but it still has not been implemented very well. In 2008, we had North Carolina pass the Renewable Energy Portfolio Standard, Duke's Modified Save-A-Watt Program, which allows for cost recovery and performance incentives on energy efficiency in the Carolinas, was passed. Florida had some good policy passed by Governor Crist, which really didn't go as far as we would like it to. The TVA board initiated the IRP in 2009, somewhat a result of the coal ash spill. So I guess that's the silver lining for the cloud there. And then in 2010, the Georgia Public Service Commission approved a performance incentive for Georgia Power on energy efficiency programs. So we're starting to move in the right direction, and we're getting the policy drivers that we need in place to encourage the utilities to move forward with energy efficiency. So next slide. That was our brief history of energy efficiency in the Southeast, and now we're going to talk about what's happening today. So we can go on to the next slide. So since 2009, efficiency impacts in the Southeast have more than doubled. So as you can see, the green bars are where we were at in 2009, which is not too big a savings. The programs in Georgia hadn't really started yet. There was some, you know, weatherization programs and some customer service efficiency programs, nothing really robust. And in the Carolinas, in 2009, Duke started implementation mid-year. Progress really didn't start until 2010. TVA had their customer service programs, you know, just offering weatherization and, you know, hot water heater wraps, things that are not robust programs. And in Florida, they had substantially more in 2009 because the Energy Efficiency Conservation Act was in place, but still nowhere near the potential that they could be achieving. And then we can look at the kind of purpley bars on the right side. The 2011 numbers have skyrocketed, particularly for the Carolinas, largely driven by Duke Energy, which I'll talk about a little bit more. But so this is good. We're moving forward. We're capturing actual savings. Duke saved, I think, around 500 gigawatt hours in 2011. So this is good. We're moving in the right direction. Next slide. So this has been something that I've been working on for the last few months, which is, you know, what's the energy efficiency impacts by utility for the last year. And this is a little bit difficult to find all this information, but this is what we've pulled together. And as you can see, Duke Energy is achieving, you know, almost 0.75% efficiency savings annually, or at least in 2011. So that's huge. That's huge improvement over where we were in 2009. And JEA is Jacksonville down in Florida. They're doing a great job as well. And we're hoping that these utilities are going to continue to grow. You can see that there's clearly some laggards in the Southeast too. Georgia Power is down there on the far right. They have programs, but they really are keeping them at a very low level. As far as Southern Company, we don't even have Alabama Power or Mississippi Power on here because they don't have any data that they publicly share on this beyond EIA 861 data, so they didn't get included in this. But, you know, generally speaking, we're moving forward in ways that we haven't seen in the past, and we're hoping to continue that trajectory. Next slide. So Duke Energy, this is a slide on costs in 2011. Duke Energy is really saving the most energy at the lowest cost in the Southeast. And this is a little bit of a simplified, levelized cost. I just took the savings and acted as if they had a 10-year measure lifetime and looked at what the cost of the programs were over that period of time. So it's not an exact calculation, but it is apples to apples in regard to how all the utilities are calculated. We still are seeing a pretty significant increase in costs from our Florida utilities, and we're working I'm trying to figure out why exactly that is. I did pull the solar costs out because Florida does have a solar requirement that gets wrapped in with their energy efficiency budget, but they still came out higher than many of the other utilities, with the exception of JEA. So, you know, the other thing that's of note on this slide is that Georgia Power, even though they're not achieving that much savings, they're still doing it for pretty cheaply, which isn't a great situation, but at least it's not low savings at an enormous cost. So that's a good, I guess, best outcome that could happen there. Next slide. So while all of that is great news, the reality is that even though we have some leaders in the Southeast, we're still lagging behind the rest of the country. And this slide has the same utilities that you saw. It's in the reverse order. So we have savings as a percentage of sales. And on the far right, we have some comparison utilities that are not from California, Arizona and Iowa, which have been implementing programs for, probably, I guess, at least 15 years, I would think. And they're achieving over 1% and have been for quite some time. So we are doing good, but we have lots of opportunity for more growth, which I think will bring us into the next section of the presentation about the future. So if we can go to the next slide. There we go, onward. So there's like about six or seven different opportunities that I wanted to talk about moving forward with what we need to be doing in the Southeast to continue to grow our energy efficiency resource. And the first one is we really need to be working with our regulators. And the regulators, the commissioners, the Public Utility Commission staff are the people who tell the investor and utilities what they can and cannot do and approve their decisions. And they play a critical role in advancing energy efficiency, which is not, earth-shattering news to anyone, but we do need to continue to keep it in the forefront of our minds that, you know, our state policy is really driving energy efficiency. And what I have on the slide are just some examples of decisions that the regulators get to, that they determine whether or not how this is going to go. So cost recovery on efficiency investment. Most of the utilities now in the Southeast, in the states that SAFE works, have cost recovery on efficiency investment, meaning that when they prudently spend a dollar on energy efficiency programs, they get to recover that dollar. And the second bullet, return and or performance incentive on efficiency investments, you know, in addition to allowing them to recover their costs, they receive a performance incentive so that efficiency looks a little bit closer, if not exactly like a generation asset on their books in terms of how they're making money. So taking away that disincentive of the utility to promote energy efficiency. And we have performance incentives in place in Georgia has one that's going to start in 2012. Progress and Duke and the Carolinas have Save a Watt, and Progress has a cost recovery and performance incentive. And the FECA utilities in Florida the commission can provide a performance incentive, but I don't believe that they have crafted that policy yet. So that's something they could move forward with. They have the authority to do so. The third bullet here is prudency review of new generation or power purchase agreements. When the utility decides that they want to build a new asset or they want to do a PPA to buy power from another entity, the commissions approve this. And, you know, in the Southeast, we are not looking at alternatives to new generation and power purchase agreements as effectively as we could. The other utilities around the country, there's a requirement that you look at renewables and efficiency instead of just looking at coal and nuclear or buying power from someone else. And we're trying to push that line of thinking forward with our regulators here in the Southeast so that we can ensure that consumers are getting the lowest cost power, which is most likely going to come from efficiency first. My fourth bullet point here is integrated resource planning is when the utility looks at all of their assets and what their demand is and figures out how they're going to put it together over the next 3 to 5 years is what the focus time frame on most IRPs are, and then the plan goes out to 20 years. And that's something that the commissions approve across the Southeast where they're being submitted, the plans are being submitted, and we want to make sure that all resources are being adequately reviewed and placed on fair ground as a resource, and all of the benefits and costs of the resources are being integrated into these plans. And I'll talk about this a little bit more later on, but this is a key part of what needs to happen in the Southeast, is making sure that energy efficiency is a robust and fully credited resource in IRPs. And then finally, identifying efficiency as a priority resource. This is not something that's happened in the Southeast, but in other parts of the country, the regulators have determined that efficiency should be the first resource that's used. And that's a decision that the commission can make. And that's something that would be great if we could see that in the Southeast, but I don't think that's on the horizon right now, or I haven't heard about anybody talking about it in the Southeast yet. So that's kind of our first opportunity, is working with regulators and making sure that we continue to educate them and continue to promote these best practices from around the country. So we can go to the next slide. So the second opportunity is moving forward. Efficiency must play a significant role in system planning, and this is the integrated resource planning that I was referring to. And coal retirements are going to be very big in the Southeast. There's about 7,700 megawatts of coal that's scheduled to retire by 2020, and that is retirement of plants that are legally bound to retire and those that have been announced retirements. So this number obviously can change, but that's just what's on the books right now for retirement. And we need to think about what's going to replace that. And we don't want it to be more coal, obviously. And, you know, efficiency needs to be used when we move forward with our integrated resource planning across the Southeast to make sure that we're taking coal offline and not using other risky or dirty resources. So just kind of a back of the envelope calculation, we need about 500 gigawatt hours a year of efficiency to replace the energy that's generated by these 7,700 megawatts of coal power. And the reason that it's kind of a low number is because the capacity factor of these plants is not fantastic, which is part of the reason they need to be retired. So obviously this isn't, you know, my statement about 500 gigawatt hours a year is not a system planning calculation. It's just back of the envelope about what level of efficiency we need to be achieving. And the good news is that, like I said earlier, Duke Energy got about 500 gigawatt hours of efficiency in 2011. So it is possible to capture this much efficiency, and just one utility has done it. And moving forward in Duke's 2012 IRP, they're projecting that they will capture 4,800 gigawatt hours of efficiency in their base case. And what this 500 gigawatt hours a year over 8 years calculates to is about 3,800 gigawatt hours. So in Duke Energy's 2012 IRP, they're forecasting, or they're projecting, that they can achieve more than the amount of efficiency that's needed to take these coal plants offline. So we're in the ballpark of what we need to be doing in terms of efficiency. You know, if it's at the right time of day, et cetera, where this isn't that detailed of a presentation, but, you know, we're getting there where we can talk about efficiency being a viable alternative. So if we can go to the next slide. The third opportunity that I want to talk about is increased transparency. And this is really, really important in the Southeast. We've had just a lot of problems getting information from our regulated utilities, and Southern Company is probably the biggest culprit in this regard. As I said earlier, Alabama Power and Mississippi Power are not even on my data charts that I have for what the utilities are doing with efficiency in the Southeast, because there's no dockets or proceedings that I can get that information from publicly. And there's just a really severe lack of transparency that makes it difficult to benchmark our utilities. It makes it difficult to have an informed conversation about where the utilities could be going and how they could be doing things differently. And that's something that we would really like to see. And it's critical to us moving forward with efficiency in the Southeast is to understand what's actually happening. TVA is not an investor-owned utility. It's regulated by the board. So to the extent that they don't want to provide us with information, we have a very difficult time getting it from them. Thus far, we've had a generally cooperative relationship between TVA and SACE, and they've shared a lot of information with us on how, in regard to how they're doing. So no major complaints on that right now, but we would like to continue to strengthen our relationship with them and learn more about what they're doing and get the same level of information from TVA that we get from Georgia Power and Duke Energy and Progress Energy across the other states. Florida is also a pretty big culprit in this lack of transparency. They don't file a lot of information with the commission, and it is almost impossible to access information about how their programs are performing, how much the programs cost on an individual basis, you know, if they're hitting their targets, if people are happy with the programs, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a pretty big piece of what needs to happen in the Southeast moving forward. I don't know that this is as much of an issue in other parts of the country as it is in the Southeast. So if we can go to the next slide. Moving forward, we need to continue to push on the utilities to introduce new programs and use innovative implementation. Duke Energy got a lot of its savings from lighting, from CFLs, in the past 2 years. And that is great, but now that we have new lighting standards coming online, we really need to help the utilities move forward with looking at what are they going to achieve beyond CFLs. And as more savings are captured, we really need to continue to look forward to what other programs are available and how can they be run more effectively. And I just pulled a few examples from some recent ACEEE summer study reports that I read. Plug load programs are something that we're not really seeing in the Southeast yet, which is, you know, plug loads are everything that you plug into the wall, and it's an ever-increasing part of what our energy consumption is, with everyone having phones and computers and iPads and iPhones and everything else, plugging them into the wall. And what one utility is doing is a midstream program where instead of trying to work directly with a customer and offer them an incentive at the point of sale or with the manufacturer and give them an incentive to, you know, spend 2 more cents on their product and actually make it an efficient product that turns off when it's fully charged as opposed to continuing to suck the power down, this utility is working with retailers, and they're offering a pretty small incentive that becomes a large incentive when you're a retailer and you're buying crates of a product. And so that's kind of a new program design for working with plug loads. It's often hard to incentivize consumers to change their behavior with the plug loads, or it takes a lot of information. So this is a different way to go around that, is working with the retailers, and I think that program has been pretty successful. On-bill financing and flexible loan terms is another area. On-bill financing has kind of been coming up in South Carolina with the co-ops in South Carolina. They've been doing a pilot program, and they did 100 houses last year, and they're rolling it out to a larger full-scale program this year. And that has been going well, but we really needed to go beyond. There's some Georgia municipal utilities that are also doing some on-bill financing, but we need the investor-owned utilities to start thinking about financing and getting rid of that upfront capital cost barrier to consumers. The flexible loan terms was something interesting that I saw, where giving your program managers the ability to reduce the monthly payments if your energy savings are not as high as expected, so that similar to on-bill financing, the consumer is saving money on their monthly bill. So even though they're paying for this energy efficiency measure, the amount of savings that it produces is reducing their bill by enough that they're paying, you know, the same amount or less than they would have been otherwise. And so that makes efficiency more accessible to low-income consumers, to anybody who's capital constrained, and reduces the general capital barrier. So that's something that, you know, in a lot of our states we have pretty significant low-income rates, particularly Mississippi, Alabama. So that's something we need to be thinking about to get customers involved in efficiency there. Targeted rebates is another implementation idea that we could be thinking about. NYSERDA, I read about, is doing a program where generally they have a 50% rebate on the incremental cost of an energy efficiency measure for a household if they're doing like retrofits within their house for certain measures, you know, insulation and things like that. And they have changed the rebate for different if you are earning 60 to 80% of the median income, so you're not a low-income consumer, but you're earning less than what the median is, they will double the rebate to 50%. Sorry, generally, NYSERDA offers a 25% rebate on this. And if you're earning less than what the median is, they've ramped up that rebate to 50%, which is a great idea to target your customers that are harder to reach, you know, your lower middle-income consumers that are not, that are cash-strapped right now and don't have the capital to put these efficiency improvements into their home. And so this is a great way to target that market that's sometimes hard to reach. And then another program idea, right-sizing and quality incentive, quality installation incentive with these both really pertain to HVAC programs, where you want to make sure not only are you putting the right size HVAC system in and not oversizing it, but also making sure that it's installed correctly. And we haven't seen too many of these types of incentives in the Southeast. We've certainly been encouraging the utilities to think about quality installation and providing a rebate to their installers for making sure that the equipment's being installed properly. But we haven't got a lot of traction on that yet. So those are some program ideas for how we need to continue to push forward. If we can go to the next slide. So industrial efficiency and CHP are definitely going to be a key component in how we achieve our clean energy future. You know, we've got all this coal coming offline. We're going to have some load growth. And if we can use efficiency to meet a lot, all of the load growth and, you know, as much of the coal retirements as we can, we're going to be in good shape. But what we're really lacking in the Southeast is generally industrial efficiency programs. There are not many utilities that offer any industrial efficiency programs. Most of the industrial customers can opt out. And this is just a huge hole in our portfolio in the Southeast. And, you know, efficiency, industrial efficiency is quite often the lowest cost energy efficiency that you can capture. And because efficiency isn't viewed as a resource in the Southeast, we're not pushing the commissions to require industrial customers to participate in these programs. And it's really hurting all of us because when they don't buy efficiency, they're consuming more power and we're building more power plants and everybody's paying for it. And that's the bottom line. So this is an ongoing struggle that we have in the Southeast is getting industrial customers on board, getting really the regulators on board with saying, yeah, industrial customers, you have to participate. And yes, utilities, you need to think about what the best program offerings for these customers are. The chart on the right is about CHP, which is combined heat and power, which is generating electricity and thermal energy from a single fuel source. And this is a recent report that came out this month from ACEEE, and the report names down there at the bottom of the slide, Coal Retirements and CHP Investment Opportunities. And what the report showed was that is the percentage of coal capacity that's retiring that could be replaced with CHP. And, you know, these numbers are really significant. 51% of coal retirements in Alabama from now until 2020 could be replaced with CHP, which is going to come from the commercial and industrial sector. And this is something we've been working on at SACE, is how can we enable CHP? And we're having ongoing conversations with the utilities about it, but it's definitely still a work in progress. But a huge opportunity, and we have to tap this resource if we're going to make our clean energy future in the Southeast. Can we go to the next slide? Finally, this is the last opportunity, our major opportunity I think we need to be working on to make sure that we have energy efficiency in the Southeast, is we need to be thinking about our distribution planning and smart grid infrastructure, because those are both, well, distribution planning, you know, is, there's huge benefits to not expanding your distribution system. And if we place our efficiency in such a way, you know, and target our efficiency at areas that have congestion or that are slated for distribution expansion, cost savings associated with it, and we need to be thinking about that as we move forward with our efficiency programs, is how can we offset infrastructure investment that's unnecessary, and how can we reduce congestion? And what is the value of that, and are we putting into our planning models? The smart grid infrastructure, we have a lot of one-way meters, one-way communication meters that have been put into place in the Southeast. We really need two-way communications to enable demand response and energy efficiency to be a dispatchable resource where the utilities can see that the load is going down in real time and can communicate to their customers at what point they're, you know, at what point should you be reducing power based on what your cost parameters are. And obviously, smart grid is kind of a term that it catches almost everything, but we're going to need infrastructure that allows communication between the utility and between the customer and between distributed generation to bring all of these pieces together for our clean energy future. So if we can move on to the next slide. You know, these are a lot of the work that we're doing in the Southeast is around these different opportunities that I've been discussing, in addition to a variety of other issues. Rate impacts is always a big issue in front of our commissions in the Southeast. And, you know, we need to turn that conversation to being about bill impacts as opposed to rate impacts. And we need to make sure we're looking at all of the costs of electricity and not just the rate. You know, what are the additional riders on there and how much are they costing customers? Utility financial incentives, which I talked a little bit about on my first slide, about opportunities, which is, you know, are the utilities being incentivized to promote energy efficiency? Resource planning is critical. We need to make sure this whole big picture is coming together and that distributed generation energy efficiency are being valued appropriately and considered as robustly as the alternatives. Accountability kind of goes to our transparency that we were talking about. We need to be able to see what's happening and make sure that people are doing what they say they're doing and that our efficiency programs are achieving the savings that we need them to. Our large customers, you know, we need to have C&I customers, commercial and industrial customers on board with us. And program planning, you know, we need to, this is kind of transparency and working with the regulators. We need to understand what's happening with our programs in the Southeast and where best practices are not being implemented. So those are all the things that I like to work on a day-to-day basis. So that concludes all of my presentation, but I hope that people have questions, because I know I ran through some of this kind of quickly. This is my Albert Einstein picture. The important thing is not to stop questioning. So I hope that people have some good questions for me, and I'm looking forward to a robust conversation.
Yes, Natalie, we have quite a few questions, so we'll just jump right in.
Okay.
Hold on one second. Now, these have been coming in throughout the presentation. I know you haven't seen them because they only come to my control panel.
Okay.
So I've written down the slides that they popped up around that time.
Yeah, and we can go back to them too.
Okay. So the first one, are these GWH impacts from efficiency or conservation? Now, that was around slide 9.
Okay. So I'm not certain what the distinction is or that this question is making, but generally when I think of conservation, I think about people changing their behaviors. And when I think about efficiency, I think about a technology that provides the same service but consumes less energy. And there's probably some behavioral impacts wrapped into the gigawatt hour savings from slide 9. But I think for the most part, those are coming from technology-based solutions because that's generally what the utilities are most comfortable with. You know, you take a widget out that is inefficient and you put a widget in that is efficient, and you can, you know, calculate from an engineering perspective what the savings are, and you can also measure what the savings are in terms of either your bill impacts or just how much energy is being consumed. So I would say they're mostly efficiency. But I'm sure there are some conservation. I know there's a few kind of behavior change programs going on, but I don't know that they had significant savings in 2011 or 2009. Moving forward, I think that conservation and behavior change could be a much bigger component of the portfolio.
Okay. This question was around the same time, slides 9 and 10. Does this data include any of the green building impacts?
Can we go back to slides 9 and 10 just so we can all look at them? Sorry.
So
green building impacts. So what I have measured on these slides probably does not include green building impact because it depends on who's implementing it. So what this tracks is what investor-owned utilities are doing with their programs that are approved by the public service commissions, by the regulators. And so there could be some green building impacts if the utilities have provided an incentive or are partnering with a city, but I would think that generally speaking, any green building impacts go above and beyond this unless the materials that were being used have been incentivized by a utility. So there could be some in there. I would assume that there's probably more efficiency than what is being shown on here, but it's not being ratepayer funded. I hope that answered the question or at least gave you an understanding of what I'm trying to show in this slide.
Okay. Sorry about that. The presentation wasn't allowing me to go back.
No problem.
Our next question. This is around the same time, too, and I'm sorry. It's difficult to remember, I'm sure, back to the very beginning. But are these energy savings total savings or incremental?
So this
example,
go ahead.
Example, order programs should show greater cumulative savings because programs have higher penetration.
This is an annual look because we're concerned about ongoing continued investment in efficiency, and this is not a cumulative perspective. If we looked cumulatively, I'm sure Florida utilities would look much different because they have had programs going on for a significantly longer period of time, but a little bit every year is not going to get us to the clean energy future that we want. We need a lot every year, so that's why I'm not looking at cumulative impacts. Plus, I'm trying to break this down as much as I can to an apples-to-apples comparison across the utilities about what's happening today as opposed to what happened in, you know, 1990.
Okay. Can you expand on cost recovery calculation methodology?
Oh, sure. So that's the next slide. I don't know if it's hard for you to get to that one. Cost recovery calculation methodology. I can expand on the levelized cost methodology, which may be what the person was asking about. I don't think that I talked about cost recovery calculation methodology. I think everyone would fall asleep if we start talking about cost recovery. So I'll talk about the levelized cost, which I think might be the question. And maybe whoever that is can ping back in with a follow-up if that's not what they wanted. But on the slide after this, I had the utilities ranked in terms of what their levelized cost was. And it's not a true levelized cost. It's I took the savings for 2011, and I assumed that the measure lifetime for those savings was 10 years, which from a portfolio perspective, is not too radical. And, you know, some utilities have an 8-year portfolio measure life, and some have a 12-year portfolio measure life. So I just figured 10 was, I think it, this isn't the slide either, but that's okay. What I did was take those savings and assume they had a 10-year lifetime. So I multiplied those savings for 10 years, and then I took the cost for implementing that measure for 1 year and divided it into it. So that gave me the 1 cent a kilowatt hour levelized cost number, which, you know, simplified levelized cost number. And if that wasn't the question that people wanted the answer to, then please follow up and I can, if we go to the next slide too, my email address is on it and people can also send me emails for direct follow-up if I'm not.
Sure, Natalie, we have a couple more, so just hold on 1 second. What are your thoughts on grid reliability questions related to energy efficiency?
Grid reliability in regard to energy efficiency, I mean, I think that it, as a resource, you can deploy efficiency wherever you'd like. So if you see that there's grid congestion or that you need or you're planning expansions, you can definitely target efficiency to go there. I don't think that increasing the amount of efficiency really causes any problems with grid reliability. I guess, you know, the concern might be from a utility perspective that you're not actually achieving the savings and you're not going to have backup power to replace the what you planned would be achieved with efficiency, but it's a pretty modular resource. So as you're going along, you can be adjusting to ensure that you're capturing the amount of efficiency that you need to. You can ramp up incentives. You can decrease incentives. You can, you know, move around and keep the programs flexible so that you don't have reliability issues. I would also say that in the Southeast, the utilities have either exactly hit the numbers that they thought they would, which I think further goes to testify that it's a very modular resource that you can control, or they've gone way over them if they're incentivized to. I mean, Duke is blowing its numbers out of the water with what they planned they would hit versus what they are hitting. So I don't see underperformance being the issue right now in the Southeast. I mean, the utilities have pent-up demand, and I guess when, to me, when the utility comes within, you know, 10, 40, 50 megawatt hours of what they project they're going to capture with energy efficiency, they know how to hit those targets. So I don't see reliability being a major concern.
Okay. I have another one for you. Do you see any potential for a market in energy efficiency and white tags in the future for the Southeast? Example, utilities could pay independent parties to do the energy efficiency and trade in energy efficiency credits.
Well, I guess there could be. I don't know that the utilities are really too keen on letting anybody else do efficiency. I mean, I guess they could earn credits. And I guess other parties could earn credits as well, and then there could be a market system. I think that what we want to do is encourage the utilities to look at efficiency as a planning resource as opposed to a market where you're trading credits around. And I guess I guess there's a possibility of it. I don't see it happening because because we don't have an independent system operator. We don't have any marketplaces in general around our electricity in the Southeast. So I guess that would be my first kind of hesitation as to why that might be difficult. If you know, like in New England, where you can bid efficiency into the power markets. It's just a whole different ballgame, and we don't have that infrastructure or really desire to have a wholesale marketplace for electricity, which would lead me to believe that there's going to be resistance to an efficiency marketplace. But who knows? I mean, crazier things have happened. So I don't know. I'm not certain. I don't have a good answer for that one.
Okay. I do have a few comments. Do you want me to read those and see if you'd like to comment on them? So the first comment, Duke just introduced the Insulate and Seal program yesterday in addition to their Smart Saver portfolio of energy efficiency services, where homeowners can earn up to $425 in rebates for making your home energy efficient from Duke. This is from Dan Gerst.
Okay. Yeah, Duke did recently roll out their Tune and Seal measures. They actually had those measures in a different program for a while, and then they canned that program and moved those measures over to their new program. So that was good. We were a little bit disappointed when they got rid of the program that those measures were originally in, but we were happy to see the majority of the measures that were being installed from that program move to a new program. So good stuff. We're happy they're continuing to offer those as incentives for consumers to save money on their bills.
Great. Natalie, one more just came through, so hold on a sec. Okay, Natalie, one question in follow-up to the grid reliability questions.
Okay.
If a coal plant is shut down through energy savings, how can energy efficiency replace the coal?
If a coal plant is shut down from energy savings? I mean, I think this is getting into the system planning where we need to look at how efficiency can play at different times of the day and what kind of resource mix needs to be used to replace the coal. But dropping the total load enables other resources to come online at cheaper rates and replace the coal. I mean, the coal is going to go offline. Coal plants are being retired one way or the other. It's just a question of what we're going to replace it with. And if you reduce the amount of total electricity that needs to be produced, you're going to be displacing coal if that's what you're taking offline. So I understand that this question is talking about 8760 and efficiency on an hourly or, 15-minute interval basis. But and I'm happy to talk about it at another time. I just don't think that it's exactly what we want to focus on this particular phone call.
Sure.
I understand the concerns, and my email address is up there, and I'm happy to talk to you about it.
Great. Thank you, Natalie. Those are all the questions that we have right now. So I guess we can go ahead and wrap it up if we don't have any other additional questions. Okay.
Well,
thanks, Natalie.
You're calling in and listening, and please let me know if you have any questions, and I'm happy to talk about anything that came up on the call or any other thoughts that you have around energy efficiency in the Southeast.
Great. Thank you. And thanks,
thank
everybody,
you
for attending today and for your thoughtful questions. We're very excited about our monthly webinar series, as it's a great way for us to connect with you, our members and supporters, on the critical issues we all care so much about. This presentation, as I mentioned before, and the recording of today's webinar will be posted on our website via our webinar archive page. And please take advantage of Natalie's email up there with any additional questions. And thanks so much. Have a great day.